Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. So today we're creating a conferences page as a subpage of Meeting Drac after the highly successful Belfast conference on HMS Belfast on the 17th. As you can see, I'm just making a nice little link there under Meeting Drac, making it blue. Then I'm going to create a new page. There's various formats you can choose from, but in this particular case, I'm going to start off with a blank sheet. I'm going to name it Conferences. And I'm going to go back, link that internally to the URL conferences. So nice and easy, already got that set up, links to a page. But now I'm going to store the conference that we've just had, its speakers and its subjects. So I'm actually going to use a testimonial format. And initially I thought we'll do it like this, with the names of the presenters and the conference title. But then I thought probably the talks would be quite useful as well. So I put those in, realized I'd already put the names of the presenters under there, so I didn't need to repeat that twice. Move the title off up to the right, widen that, and there you go. A nice little basic summary, which I can add to later on with the proceedings of the conference videos, etc. Take out the other templates ready for future conferences, and there we go. My conferences page is nice and ready to go. Easy with Squarespace. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenefell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. It was the 6th of May, 1801. Commander Lord Thomas Cochrane was guiding the 14-gun brig HMS Speedy along the Spanish coast near Barcelona. Although under the command of the Royal Navy, Speedy was hardly a ship to strike fear into many foes, if you just looked at her appearance. Her firepower consisted of a mere 14 four-pounder guns, her total broadside weight thus being 28 pounds, a weight that Cochrane sometimes joked he could walk around with in his pocket. There were some gunboats that carried a single heavy 32-pounder cannon that therefore actually threw more metal than the entire ship. Cochrane had tried several times to upgrade her firepower, both with heavy chase guns at the bow and stern, and also by simply upgrading the 4-pounders to the mighty 6-pounder, but Speedy was just too small and too lightly built to take anything larger. Still, she could fight similar-sized vessels, and she could capture merchant ships, which she had been doing, albeit her crew at this stage had been almost halved, as between a couple of men down to disease, a handful of casualties, and a lot sent away as prize crews, they were running a little short. That morning, on the horizon, the sails of a large ship were sighted. A number of merchant ships had recently left Barcelona, and this ship's sails were of a slightly unusual configuration, with a large lateen sail aft. And so Speedy quickly began heading over to investigate. Wind conditions were light, although she did have the weather gauge, and so it took a couple of hours to close the distance enough to work out what exactly this strange ship was. It turned out to be a Spanish Zeebeck-style frigate, hence the slightly odd sail layout, and it was called El Gamo. The frigate had been dispatched to deal with whatever ship seemed to be menacing shipping in the area, from the Spanish perspective, since the 8-gun brig that they'd sent out a few days earlier had just become one of Cochrane's many prizes. El Gamo, though, was a very different prospect to the little brig. She carried just over 300 men, which was about 6 times Speedy's complement, and she was armed with 32 guns. Now, whilst this might sound on the face of things that she's only a little more than double Speedy's 14 guns, the actual firepower difference was considerably larger. The absolute smallest guns on the Spanish ship were 8 8-pounder guns, each twice the weight of any of Speedy's guns, and although even the 8-pounder was almost a pea shooter in terms of rated ships, the 4 on each broadside could fling a 32-pound broadside in weight of shot, and that alone was already more than Speedy's entire own broadside. Then there were 22 12-pounders, which constituted her main armament, 11 of them on each side. That added another £132 of shot, which was almost five times Speedy's broadside. And finally, there are a pair of 24-pounder carronades, or the Spanish equivalent thereof, one on each side, each of which alone almost matched Speedy's entire broadside weight again. All told, El Gamo could fling almost seven times the broadside of Speedy in terms of weight of shot, assuming that none of the guns were double-shotted on either side, of course, and the larger guns could naturally fire far more effective anti-personnel and anti-rigging shot, while also massively outranging Cochrane's four-pounders. By any reasonable metric, then, this was time for discretion to be the greater part of valour and for Speedy to sail in the opposite direction as fast as humanly possible. But firstly, if she got her sail up, El Gamo would probably run them down. And secondly, if ever there was going to be a Royal Navy captain who very, very heavily ticked the unreasonable box, it was going to be Cochrane. And so he ordered that Speedy was to set an intercept course and clear for action. In response, El Gamo fired a gun to draw their attention and hoisted Spanish colours. The gun signal was also a direct request to Speedy to identify itself. Sailing without a flag, which both ships had been doing, was common practice at the time, since flags wore away quite quickly in the wind, and ships that were out away from home for months or years at a time might therefore run out of flags if they just had one flying at all times, and so flags tended to be hoisted only when the ship was going into battle or when there was some other need to identify itself. Cochrane responded by hoisting one of his own flags. This one, though, was an American flag. Now, this was, of course, a disguise, and an acceptable one under the rules of war at the time, as it was held that as long as you ran your true colours up before taking any hostile action, prior to that, you could try and deceive your enemy however you liked. And from El Gamo's perspective, the ruse was actually quite plausible. The quasi-war between France and America had only recently concluded, and back in those days it could take months for such news to percolate out across the seas. And so the prospect of an American brig, perhaps on its way back from raiding, was a reasonable possibility. As the distance closed, Cochrane judged, though, that his opponent was becoming more and more suspicious. But he'd already formulated a plan, for Speedy had seen El Gamo a few weeks previously, and Cochrane, in analysing the ship, had noted an opportunity for future encounters. The frigate's gun deck was somewhat higher than most. This was actually quite good for El Gamo if she was fighting a peer opponent in rough seas, or if the ship was quite lively. But he'd also noted that the gun ports were also somewhat small, and seemed to be such that they would prevent the ship's cannon from being depressed all that much. These two factors combined offered a narrow window for a small ship like Speedy, as if she could get close enough, her hull and crew would actually be under the gun's arc of fire. And so Cochrane ordered Speedy to come about onto the opposite tack and hoist British colours. Sure enough, El Gamo quickly sent out a broadside, but between the roll of the ship and Speedy's quick course change, their aim was off and the broadside missed. As they closed, Cochrane ordered his own tiny broadside to be treble-shotted and aimed as high as it possibly could go. A second Spanish broadside lashed out, much closer this time, but the only damage was a few holes punched in the sails. They were already mostly under the guns. As the Spanish gunners hastened to reload for a third broadside, Speedy swung in alongside, rigging tangling, and unleashed a mighty 84 pounds of shot. That was still somewhat less than what you could accomplish with any three or four big guns that you'd find on a typical ship of the line, and ships of the line had considerably more than three or four big guns, but Speedy wasn't aiming to cause major structural damage. Instead, they were going for the enemy crew, and 21 small 4-pounder iron balls, moving at speed, were more than capable of being lethal if they hit anyone. Indeed, this first salvo got lucky. El Gamo's captain and bosun both fell under the initial blasts. Unable to hit the small British ship with their cannon in return, El Gamo's crew made for the side of their ship, aiming to pour musket fire down on them. But despite the height advantage, they found that Cochrane's crew was waiting for them, and volleys of musket and pistol shot greeted them as soon as they stuck their heads over the gunwales of El Gamo. Plus, in this contest, the four-pounders, cranked right up with some of their coins removed, offered the British crew a distinct firepower advantage. Still, El Gamo's crew would not be fazed, even though two of the more common lines of attack had been denied to them, and they quickly resolved to instead board the Speedy. As the ship's gunners ran up onto the deck to help form the boarding parties, Cochrane ordered Speedy to veer off, firing another broadside into the assembled Spanish as he left. This bought some time. As the two ships drew apart, the hapless gunners had to run back down onto El Gamo's gun deck to try and bring their weapons to bear. And as soon as he saw significant movement in this regard, Cochrane changed course once again and came back alongside, repeating his previous attack. The cycle repeated itself, and so in total, Speedy would come alongside El Gamo a total of 3 times, before veering off, each time delivering as much firepower as she possibly could, then ducking away as the boarding parties formed yet again. However, this was not a tactic that they could keep repeating. After the third such gambit, Spanish gunfire had rendered Speedy's masts, yards, rigging and sails into more of what we might recognise today as modern art than any serious means of propulsion. And Cochrane was very aware that should he lose one of his two masts at the wrong moment, and then therefore be left at some distance from El Gamo, it would all be over with one thunderous Spanish broadside. And so he prepared yet another big roll of the dice. Every man of the ship's crew was ordered to prepare for boarding, barring the ship's surgeon, who volunteered to steer the ship, and the ship's boys, who would be at a severe disadvantage in the vicious hand-to-hand fighting that was due to come, thanks to their small size. Using the soot that now liberally coated Speedy and her equipment after so much gunpowder discharge at close range, Cochrane ordered the men in the forward boarding party to blacken their skin and faces, a practice that was known to be employed by the cutthroat pirates and corsairs who operated in and around the Western Mediterranean. And yes, you did hear that right, the forward boarding party. Cochrane had split his small force into 2 even smaller forces, reasoning that most sane people would likely conclude that nobody who only had 50 men or so trying to board a ship that had 6 times that many crew would ever divide those numbers down. Such division would only be done if either there were more men to come, or the opponent was truly insane. Mentally grinning to himself as he put a big check mark in the latter box, Cochrane readied his own weapons as Surgeon Guthrie proved to be quite a dab hand at ship handling, and Speedy ranged up alongside her larger foe for the 4th time. Another broadside was fired from Speedy's guns, and as the smoke swirled up and over the Spanish deck, so too did the forward boarding party climb as fast as they could. Suddenly, the Spanish found themselves faced with a couple of dozen screaming men covered entirely in black soot and wielding all sorts of weapons as they burst through the gun smoke. Even with most of the ship's gunners still below, the Spanish still had a considerable numerical advantage, but even as they rallied to press this group backwards, Cochrane and the rest of Speedy's crew appeared from behind and caught their foes in a pincer movement, albeit one where those who were trapped still considerably outnumbered the attackers. Spaniards were falling left, right and centre, but so were some of Speedy's men, and even at the roughly 5-to-1 ratio of loss that they were managing, which would be a fantastic accounting for themselves in practically any other measure, it was a simple fact that El Gamo had a 6-to-1 manpower advantage, and so the British force, even if they kept up that 5-to-1 ratio of killed and wounded, was still going to run out of men first. And that was when Cochrane noted a large Spanish flag, the one they'd hoisted earlier, billowing above the smoke and combat. He directed his own boarding party in a sharp offensive that managed to clear the aft end of the ship temporarily, and then he ordered the flag hauled down. Seeing the flag go down, which was the traditional way that a ship surrendered, and with over 50 of their compatriots having been rather quickly killed or wounded by the berserk boarders, the Spanish crew concluded that their officers, who would have been mostly concentrated aft, must have decided to surrender to this enemy force of unknown size, since the smoke still swirled around them, improved somewhat by the discharge of muskets and pistols. Some Royal Navy legends say that this surrender was spurred on by Cochrane yelling over the side to send up another 50 men, and Surgeon Guthrie enthusiastically bellowing back, 50 more men, aye aye sir, while he and the few ship's boys made as much racket as they could to try and simulate another 50 men readying weapons. The Spanish, whatever the case may be, had laid down their arms, and Cochrane quickly moved among them, separating out the officers, which he had sent over to Speedy to be confined below decks, while he herded the surviving regular deck crew below decks aboard El Gamo, before detaching a few of El Gamo's guns and aiming them at the hatches. Even as the smoke finally dissipated and the Spaniards finally realised that, once you'd discounted dead and wounded on both sides, the odds still currently sat at 263-42 in their favour. But they had technically surrendered, they had laid down their arms, and more to the point, any charge up from below with anything they could scrounge up from there would first have to get past a handful of British sailors who would invite them to try and parry a blast of grape shot from the various cannon. And so order, and the surrender, was maintained for now. Speedy's crew had lost 3 dead and another 8 or 9 men wounded. Among the latter was Lieutenant Parker, Cochrane's second in command, who'd taken a sword stab to the leg and then been shot through the lung with a musket. Thus, Cochrane would take 30 of his 42 remaining healthy men and place them as a prize crew on El Gamo, under the command of his brother, who had sailed with him as a midshipman and was one of the only British sailors still standing with a technical officer's rank, even if he wasn't yet commissioned. With just 12 other healthy men, including himself, Cochrane reboarded Speedy, and the men on both ships quickly set about making the necessary repairs so they could get underway for Minorca, since, as brave as the action had been, the appearance of anything much more than an armed Spanish rowboat at this point probably would have spelt the end for Cochrane's escapades. Luckily, the two ships did manage to make their repairs and make it back safely, and pretty much as soon as he could round up his various prize crews, put the wounded ashore and gather a few reinforcements, Cochrane was back out at sea again to cause yet more terror to warships and merchant ships alike. When he returned, with even more prizes in tow, he had expected to find El Gamo flying Royal Navy colours and awaiting his promotion to post-captain so that he could take command. But instead, he found that in his absence, the Admiralty had concluded her Zeebeck rigging was incompatible with the usual Royal Navy ship rig for ships of that size, and had instead sold her to the ruler of Algiers at something of a knockdown price for use as a merchant ship. Although, in the hands of the Algerians, it was almost certain she'd probably show up soon as a privateer. As a result, the prize money from this fantastic engagement was somewhat limited, but, although disappointing in and of itself, the crew weren't entirely hard done by, as in the weeks both before and after the engagement, they'd netted more than half a dozen other prizes in any case, and Cochrane was soon back out at sea yet again, looking for still other targets worthy of him and his crew's wrath. Now, during this video, you've probably noticed these two ships appearing in several different model scenes. This is, of course, El Gamo, as we can see, circling back round to Speedy. And if you were thinking, wow, Drax's modelling skills have come on about 16 levels, sadly, no. This is, in fact, a diorama, finalised in this form you can see here, made by Linus Spjutsberg, I think that's how it's pronounced. Apologies if I got that last bit wrong. He's an incredibly talented model builder, wargamer, and general all-around good chap. And some time ago, he contacted me and discussed collaborating on something. After some discussion, we decided El Gamo versus Speedy was a good thing to do, and he got along with constructing the ships, modelling them, as you saw, setting them up in various stages of their assault, and then went off to finish it in the format, as you can see here. Now, sadly, it did take me a little bit longer than ideal to try and get this video up and about, but that's largely because, weirdly, despite being such a really dramatic action, there's not a huge amount of other artwork actually depicting said action. I think I've pretty much exhausted the supply interspersing around the various shots that Linus did of his model setup. So, once again, thanks hugely to Linus for sorting this out. And if you want to have a look at some of his other work, you can, of course, search him up. I'll hopefully include a couple of links down below as well. So thanks once more to him. Thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this. And I hope to see you again in another video soon. Bye for now.